So this morning I wanted to share with you all a piece that I'd come across by Reverend Gary Kowalski, but I couldn't help cut some of what he said and add some of what I said. So what follows are a combination of his words and my ideas woven in. When I think of power, strength, sheer physical force, I think of an avalanche. Tons of thundering snow that comes falling down the side of a steep mountain with the speed and irresistible force of a freight train. In an instant, an avalanche can sweep away everything in its path. But there's something even more powerful than an avalanche, and that's a glacier. A glacier doesn't move as fast as an avalanche. It can be slow, inching forward a few yards in the course of an entire year. But glaciers are enormous, and they can be a mile wide and hundreds of feet thick, a creeping river of ice that can move boulders like matchsticks and grind smaller rocks as powder fine as flour. Avalanches and glaciers are powerful forces of nature, but there's something even stronger in nature, and that would be a flower. I'm thinking of the avalanche lily and the glacier lily. Each spring, as the snow begins to melt in the high mountains, these tiny flowers push their slender green stalks upward through the softening ice, through the wintry crust, and into the warming sun. They're tiny, just an inch or two in size, but the bud is inside a growing green stem that pierces right through the cold overlay of February and March, and brightens into the promise of April and a brand new season. In the beginning, millions of years ago, there were no flowers. There were ferns. There were fungi. There were dull, mossy-colored plants that spread and reproduced by means of spores. But there were no orchids. There were no apple blossoms, no fields of grass or brightly colored wildflowers. It was a monotonous world, not only dull in color, but also dull in sense and feeling. For this was the age of dinosaurs. They were giants of the animal kingdom, big and powerful, but not particularly emotionally sophisticated or consciously complex. They were no match for flowers. Toward the end of the age of dinosaurs, about 100 million years ago, something strange and wonderful happened. Plants learned how to do a new thing. They learned how to reproduce through seeds. Unlike the spores that preceded them, seeds were actually tiny organisms, embryonic and ready to grow, packaged like little meals to go with a built-in store of nutrition. And that gave the world an entirely new source of edible and abundant energy. Energy that could be converted into heat, that boosted the temperature of the four-legged and flying creatures up a notch, from cold-blooded to warm. Birds and mammals appeared. The limbic system that governs the emotions was laid over the old reptilian brain, and the inner landscape changed. Mothers began to feel a deepened bond with their children, and children clung with affection to the parents. Love appeared, and loyalty, and grief, and tears, and laughter, and curiosity, and play. All made possible by the blooming plants that had turned the earth into a botanical buffet of rare fragrances and amazing visual splendor. And it all started with the rise of the angiosperms, the name scientists give to plants that produce seeds and flowers and fruits. The earth took on a whole new look. The simple ferns were crowded out by all the amazing diversity of life that we see today. The dinosaurs gave way, replaced by creatures who were not only more quick-witted, but warm-blooded and warm-hearted. As bright and agile mentally as the flowers were brilliant in all their textures and hues. No wonder flowers are the symbol of springtime and hope. And no wonder lilies are the symbols of Easter. For there have always been empires that established their rule through sheer raw power, kingdoms of this world based on military domination of their neighbors. The Roman Empire was like that, its legions like glaciers that slowly crushed everyone who stood in their way. Their rulers were tyrant kings, but they were no match for the power of one small man, no match for the purity and simplicity of his vision. Jesus spoke of the lilies of the field because he himself was like a flower. Almost effortlessly, the beauty of his words and deeds captured the hearts of people who listened and became his disciples. He said a new kingdom, the kingdom of heaven, what we often refer to as the beloved community, was like a seed that could spread and grow, and that if we nurtured that seed of compassion inside ourselves, it could become the greatest force on earth. It was the simple truth. For there have always been regimes like the Romans. The Nazis were similar, their stormtroopers and icy cold unyielding, their panzer divisions like lumbering giants clattering with fearsome armor into combat. But again, they were no match for flowers and the man who shared them, Norbert Chopek. He was a Unitarian minister who lived in the last century in the city of Prague. His home and his church were overrun by German soldiers in the years of World War II. He gave his life defying their cruel occupation. But before he died, he influenced thousands of people with the beauty of his words and ideals, including the flower ceremony that he originated, symbolizing with an array of color and fragrance the diversity of many creeds, many cultures, and many races joining together in a bright, living bouquet. The flower ceremony continues to be celebrated in this congregation and in hundreds of congregations across the world every spring. The ritual is a testament to the power of love to withstand hate and to the vision of a tolerant faith which sweeps the world not with adherence to a set of ideas or by persecution or threats of violence, but by drawing people together with the sweet sense of freedom and compassion and lived principles. So the flowers that we share this morning bring us the assurance that warmth and kindness can pierce through the frost of cruelty and indifference, that mercy and decency will blossom, and that goodness has deep and hearty roots. What seems most fragile and perishable is most persistent and enduring. And when we gather our flowers together like this, it becomes easy to see how beauty is amplified by diversity. The repressive forces of fascism, of compulsory monoculture, would have us believe that strength and power are found in conformity, in conventionality, in orthodoxy. The ever-present forces of oppression seek to tear down the intricate complexity of people's lives. They deny the rich and varied expressions of human experience. We all hear the inner voice of judgment that says it's not okay to fall outside of the narrowly defined, culturally agreed upon normal. But we know that not only is monoculture an inherently weaker system, more susceptible to disease, but it does not match the lived experiences of our lives. We are straight and gay and lesbian and bisexual and asexual, cisgender, gender fluid, and transgender. We are people of many races, the descendants of people from all corners of our shared planet. We are scientists and artists, engineers and musicians, people of every living generation. We are a bouquet of flowers as unique and varied as the ones that we see here. Flowers represent growth, progress and development, a leveling up in Earth's complexity. They are a visual reminder of the ongoing evolution, the continuing unfolding of consciousness itself. May we allow ourselves to be drawn to the wonderment by their beauty. May we celebrate with these flowers the immense diversity of life's expressions. Amen and blessed be.